Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Welcome once again to the Gone to the Dogs podcast. Steve Fielder, the old scratchy-voiced, wore-out coon hunter, has been on the mic here with you today. Sure glad that you tuned in. Here it is, Monday, August the 18th, and by my count, that's only about 10, 11 days before Nubbin Moore, and I will be in Richmond, Indiana for Autumn Oaks. And speaking of whom, I have Mr. Moore on the other end of the line. How are you doing, Nubbin?
Hey, I'm doing just fine, Steve, doing just fine.
Well, you absolutely perked me up when I talked to you. I can be lower than a sow's belly, and I can talk to you for a little while, and you'll come up with something that'll perk me up a little bit. So it's good to talk to you.
It's good to be talked to, and it's good to hear your voice, buddy.
You betcha. Well, is it nice and cool and breezy there at Sterrett, Alabama?
It is today. We had a little rain, in fact, just a few minutes ago, it was raining, but it's quit now. So, and that cool things off when it rains.
Yeah,
and it's better. It's been hot around here, but it's It's not as bad today. It's in the 80s right now, probably lower 80s since that rain a while ago.
Yeah, I was looking last night. I talked to one of my buddies, Mac Britt, who lives a couple hours south of me here in a place called Parrish, Florida. And Mac and I hunt together in the wintertime. I don't get out there in the summer, but now he's a Florida cracker. He'll get out there and swat those 5-pound mosquitoes and hack through those palmetto bushes and all that. But he said it's awful hot down his way too. And man, he told me something yesterday. This is what's happening here, and I'm going to rant just a little bit. Florida is getting overrun with people, okay? I guess, you know, they like the governor down here. He's doing a good job, I think. And a lot of people are moving out of states where things maybe are not so good, and they're coming down here. But what they're doing is they're tearing up all the big pasture lands, and the orange groves had already just about moved out of Florida. They had a lot of disease and a lot of problems with them, and there's not a lot of oranges anymore compared to what it used to be. But I told you before, Nubbin, about going down and hunting in a big grove down south of here, yeah, a big orange grove. That thing was like 30,000 acres. Think about it. That's a big orange grove.
That is.
That thing was laid out in rows, you know, and streets and blocks and all this. And it was a great place to go coon hunting. And, you know, we used to go down there and hunt. But anyway, without getting into all that, Mac told me that one of his buddies was by there the other day, and they're bulldozing all those orange trees. They've quit the orange business, and they're going to, I guess, build homes and subdivisions and all of that.
That's happening right here, Steve. There's two right before you get to the four lane from my house. They're going to put 200 houses there. They got to bulldoze down, bulldoze all the trees, and we're getting overrun with people around here.
But that's there in Westover then, huh?
Yeah, right there in Westover, because they're coming out of Birmingham out here wanting to move out to the country.
Well, that's it everywhere, and we're just north of Tampa here, so we're getting all that in, and then we get it from Tampa and from St. Pete. St. Pete's on the west side of Tampa Bay, and Tampa on the east side. And there is no place they can't go any further west. They'll be in the water. They'll be in the Gulf of America, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyway, used to be cattle country all through Central Florida, huge pastures, cattle everywhere. When I was down here in the 60s in college, you know, that's all you saw was orange groves and pastures. But, boy, now you got it. And they build these doggone subdivisions, and they build townhouses, and it looks for the world like an army camp. It just looks like, you know, that they're going to house a bunch of soldiers in these things. But people are snatching them up, apparently.
Yep.
And the one that we drive by, Ella and I, if we go down to do any shopping or anything like that, the sign out there says new houses from 400,000 and up. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of pennies all stacked up in a stack.
That's a lot. It's terrible what houses costing nowadays.
Yeah, it sure is. But anyway, as my former pastor who moved down here and retired, he said, this is where the old elephants come to die. Go ahead.
I said, them people come from up, yard birds. They call it, well, they don't call them yard birds. What do they call them?
Snowbirds.
Yeah, they're in Texas like that, too. When I was working out there, there's a lot of them come down here.
Yeah, well, our crowds get a lot bigger in the wintertime down here, and the traffic and everything else. And then when they're building all these homes, as we go down this one road there, it's a four-lane road, and they're widening it to six lanes. And on both sides of the road, as far as you can see, they've tore out the woods and are building houses. And they're putting them up like you wouldn't believe how fast they can build these things. Oh, well, that's progress, they say. Progress.
Well, it's progress, but I don't like it around here. Four-lane road around here, that goes through here, used to be a two-lane, but now you just wouldn't believe the traffic it's out here now.
And oh, yeah.
It's still building more houses, but they're going to have to upgrade the roads and do something.
Oh, yeah, the infrastructure down here is not set up to handle all that. Well, I guess we better swing this back around to coon hunting a little bit. But
well, it needs to be. That's what it's supposed to be, a coon, not a griping session.
That's right. Bunch of old guys griping about the, I said, and I don't mean to offend any of my friends in the North because I've got plenty of them. And I appreciate them, everyone. But I said the other day, I said, we don't need more people in the South. We need more South than the people who come here, you know.
That's right.
But it's a different world, you know. And these younger people, they don't remember the old ways and all. But, well, anyhow. But that, you know, when they do that to us and they build subdivisions everywhere, that takes our hunting. You know, and it's funny that just today I read that Florida has now approved a bear season. And I guess I imagine it's for 2025. I should have double checked that. But it's going to be a 20-some day season, and I think they're going to allow dogs too. But, of course, you know, you got the antis on what a terrible thing that is and all that. And then the people with common sense get on the message threads and they say, well, you know, the bears are everywhere. My buddy.
Well, we're getting some around here, too. You know, I think they're just passing through.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, they're pretty adaptable. You know, they'll anywhere they can get a meal, they'll hang out. You know, and they like to raid dumpsters and that sort of thing. You know.
Oh yeah, they got to make a living. That's where they make a living.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we talked a minute ago about autumn oaks, and it's coming up here, creeping up on us pretty fast.
Be here before you know it.
That's right. Last year you weren't able to go, and doggone, I missed us just having that time, you know, to visit and all and get around. And of course, I flew up and stayed out there in town in a Airbnb with Jason Doobie and Ben Sheets and his dad and all, and it was good. We had a good time, but it's going to be good to just, you know, roll in there to the fairgrounds on Thursday afternoon like we usually do and see what we can get into. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah, I am, too. Listen, I talked to Morris Hardy just a couple hours ago while the girls were shopping, and I called him. He's going up there again to work with old Bob.
Good, and, yeah. That's Timber Creek.
Timber Creek Bob,
Bob Osborne.
Him and No Neck.
Now, be nice. For you friends out there, the podcast, you can guess if you want to send me a mail who that is.
Yeah.
But, we got he's nicknames for everybody, you know.
Yeah, some of them we can't use on the air,
that's
though.
That's right. The one thing I can tell you as a hint is that he's the coroner there in the county or whatever in Mississippi where he lives. And I don't know if he's originally from Alabama or not, but he loves the Crimson Tide. Now, I don't know. Is he from Alabama?
No, I don't know where he's actually from. He's probably from Mississippi, but I don't know that.
Okay. We're talking about Alabama. The other day a name came up when I was in a conversation, and I don't remember exactly who I was talking to, but Joe East. Is Joe East still with us?
As far as I know, he is.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard that far. I haven't heard one way or the other. But, yeah, old Joe, he was a good one. He sold them hunting supplies for a long time.
Bama Hunting Supplies, I believe
Bama,
it was.
Bama, yeah.
A funny, funny man. I always enjoyed seeing Joe at the hunts because you were gonna be there a while if you walked up to his booth. And he really was a comedian, man. Uh-huh. I bought some socks from him to go in my boots. And they worked really good, you know, kind of like a liner. You know, my feet are so skinny, and they kind of tend to want to waller around in my boots. Old Joe, he was a good one, a real dandy.
Let me tell you a little story that happened down at Joe's place one time. My hunting buddy years ago, he passed away a couple of years ago, Ronnie Wortham.
Yeah.
He wanted to go. He was talking about buying him a one of those shocking collars. Okay. And then we go down to his place. It's a couple hours from here, an hour and a half. So we drive down and we're shopping in his little behind his house in his little building. And he picked up one of these barking collars. And he said, "Does this thing work?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Put your fingers on them two little prongs that's under the bottom of it and bump it on the table." So he done that. He let out a big string of cuss words when that thing went off and threw it and it hit the wall. I said, "Well, buddy, you bought it now." I never will forget that.
Man.
I thought, "Dummy, you already knew what was going to happen."
That reminds me of the story. Of course, the real ones are better, but this was my old buddy Bubba back in the hills in West Virginia had a lawnmower for sale.
Yeah.
And the guy came by and bought the lawnmower, and he was a preacher, the local preacher. And of course, old Bubba, he guaranteed the lawnmower and everything. Well, Bubba's little boy was going down through town there, and he went by the church and by the parsonage there, and the preacher was out there trying to crank that lawnmower. He just kept, you know, trying to crank it, and it wouldn't crank. And he recognized Bubba's son. He said, "Hey, Junior, come over here." He said, "Your daddy sold me a bad lawnmower." He said, "This thing won't start." And the little boy said, "Well, preacher, you got to cuss it and make it start." And the preacher said, "Son, I'll have you know I'm a man of the cloth. I don't swear. I don't use cuss words. In fact, I don't even know how to cuss." And the little boy said, "Well, preacher, just keep pulling that rope and you'll learn real quick."
Yeah. It'll come to him, won't
it? It'll come to you. That's an old joke. Probably most of you out there are groaning right now and saying, "Get on with it, Fielder." Yeah.
Fielder, you can come up with something better.
Yeah, well, Ronnie, God bless his soul, he's gone on now, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was my buddy.
Yeah.
We hunted together from the time we was teenagers till he got to where he couldn't hear.
Yeah.
You know, and then he quit going. And now he's gone on to the happy hunting ground.
Right. Well, now, when you were a field rep for UKC, you served alongside Bill Taylor from Texas, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I knew him.
Yeah.
You know.
His wife, Roxanne, just passed away this week.
Okay, I saw that on, I believe somebody posted that on Facebook.
Yeah. Now, everybody in Texas, called him Tink, T-I-N-K, and I don't know where that nickname.
The nickname.
Yeah, but we always called him.
When you get a nickname, you never outgrow it.
That's right. Well, if people love you, they give you a nickname. They don't like me. David McKee over there and Lee Kearns, they call me Bubba because I wrote those articles for years in the magazine about Bubba. But, Rock, we called Bill Taylor, And that was his name, a great guy. He had at one time, I guess, maybe a throat. He had to have his voice box removed, and he used one of those devices to vibrate his voice box.
On your throat, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But what a great guy. And his wife, Roxanne, she traveled with him and did all of his paperwork and all that. You know, just such a very, very nice, sweet lady. And was apparently she, you know, had been sick, with cancer for a while. But anyway, Nubbin, as I've said many times on this podcast, you know, we're standing in the checkout line, but
that's exactly right.
But we're feeling pretty good. And
yeah, I was telling somebody this morning, I don't forget who it was now, CRS kicks in, you know.
Yeah.
And so I was talking about high school days. I said, well, there was 66 or 7 people in my high school graduating class, and there's only 7 boys left and I think 15 girls. We was talking to somebody the other day, on a classmate.
Yeah.
We was talking about them, so, you know.
Right.
Most of them are gone, but that's you know, that's what
it's a cycle of life, isn't it? Just pays to be ready.
That's right.
Pays to be ready.
Life is short.
Yeah, they say that there's a whole lot better one waiting for us, so we just got to kind of
believe that. You got to believe in something.
Yeah. That's like the old preacher says, how many of y'all want to go to heaven? Everybody raising their hand, but there's a little one guy back there, and he said, Brother Joe, you don't want to go to heaven? He said, oh, I do, but I was thinking you was getting up a bunch to go now.
Yeah, he wasn't ready to go, was he?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
You know, you was talking about nicknames. Of course, a lot of folks around here has a nickname, used to be that more than they do now, but...
Mm-hmm.
Did I ever tell you how I got the name Nubbin?
Well, I think so, but I think it bears telling again.
Okay, when I was born, I weighed a little over five pounds, a couple ounces.
Mm.
So the new baby come to the house, and the mom and all that, and my grandfather came down to the house to see the new baby. And he looked at me. This is what my father told me later on, said, my grandfather looked at me, and he looked at him. He said, hell, son, he ain't big as a nubbin. You know what a nubbin? Nubbin is a ear of corn that didn't develop. You know, and him being a farmer, he said, that's what he told my daddy. He said, hell, son, he ain't big as a nubbin. So he started calling me Nubbin. And then after a while, everybody was.
Everybody, and it stuck.
I'm just a nubbin.
That's right. Well, my grandmother had a farm in Tennessee. And my grandmother Hatfield, my mother's mom, she lived just down the street and around the corner from us when I was growing up. And she always had a garden and everything, but she didn't live in the country. You know, we actually, my grandmother pretty much lived in those coal camps and stuff, I imagine, most all her life. You know, they were born in East Kentucky, but then moved over into West Virginia. But anyway, my grandmother Fielder had a farm. You know, my granddad, he passed when I was just 6 years old. But I can remember feeding the chickens. You know, you take two ears of dry corn, get it out of the corn crib, you know, and just rub one against the other. And you'd shell one against the other, and of course the chickens would run and pick that up, you know. And I can remember saying, that's just a nubbin, and throw it back over in the pot.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was just a nubbin.
That's something. That's great.
Well, everybody's got to be something, Steve.
That's right. That's right. And that's a name that everybody knows and remembers, you know. And that's a good thing. Well, look at Pee Wee Reese, a baseball player. He was always, you know.
Exactly.
Pee Wee is all he ever was, I guess, you know. So,
yeah,
that's good. Well, Lord willing, I'll be heading that old F-150 up the road toward Alabama here within 8 or 9 days. I've had a few little issues. You know, when a truck's got 288,000 miles on it, it's bound to give you a little bit of a need to have something replaced every once in a while.
Oh, yeah,
but,
they do.
But that's been a good truck. It drives just like it did when I bought it, and I've never been really into the engine on it. I had those little coil packs replaced on it. Three of those, I think, one time it kind of had a little miss in it. But the other day it didn't want to go in reverse, and so I got that fixed. It was a cable that I guess just got old, and they replaced that. So I was going along there real good, and then all of a sudden my charging system light came on in the dash, which is in these Fords, it's a little icon, looks like a battery mm-hmm. comes on, and you get a signal.
Oh yeah.
And said my charging system wasn't working, which that meant an alternator more than likely. So but there's the little story here. So yesterday morning, I went out and started it, and I told Ella, I said, the thing's going to run. You just follow me to the garage. And, man, I got about 2 miles from the house and was merging out onto a main road there, highway there, and it stopped deader than a doornail. I mean, there was nothing work. The power steering wouldn't work. The brakes, power, everything. I mean, the entire electric system went black. So I said, no, man. And I was in this merge lane, so traffic could get around me. But I figured somebody's going to come around, make a right turn, not be paying attention. They're going to, you know, plow mm-hmm. into me. So I called 911, got a real nice lady on the line. She asked me where I was. I told her, and she said, we'll send someone right out. And this, just in a minute, here come a police car. And this guy got out, sheriff's department, he got out, and he said, well, I was just sitting right over there in that lot. He said, why didn't you come over to get me? I said, well, I didn't see you over there. But anyway, and then here come another car, and one of them had a trainee with him. And now, this was kind of funny, interesting to me. This fella was 56 years old because the first deputy asked him, he said, hey, you're new, aren't you? I've seen you, but I haven't met you. And he said, yeah, I'm new. And he said, well, do you have any prior experience? He said, nope. He said, well, were you in the military? He said, nope. So he had hired in as a deputy sheriff with no prior experience at that age. You know, that just shows you how much they need people, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a young man with him, and a little bit they called this guy with the pickup truck. It's a citizens unit or something, and he came there and sat behind me, put out the red, the orange cones, and
oh, yeah.
I sit there, and of course, Alice, she was following me, you know, so she waited, and finally the called AAA. If you don't belong to AAA, it's a good thing when you get stranded like that, because they sent a rollback out and got my truck and sent it down to the garage and all. So I had an interesting day yesterday, fooling around with all that, but that's life.
Yep. Trucks are like people. They get old and they break down.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But anyway, automotes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We missed it last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the crowds, you know, have begun to come back to automotes after the COVID year. You know, I think it was... That's been what now? 3 or 4 years ago now, I guess.
At least 4 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they went ahead and had the events, but they limited the number of vendors that could be there and all of that sort of thing.
I hope that's a thing of the past. I was bull anyway, bull crap, boy. I'm talking what I think, but.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of problems with that, and I don't want to offend anybody or anything like that, but we've all had different views about all of that stuff. But man, when they get down to the point, say you can't have a family reunion or you can't go to church with the people you love to go to church with, that's getting under my collar a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, we made it through that too, and I wrote a chapter in my book that I did some research about these boys that up there in Michigan where I hunted for so many years back in the 20s, I believe it was. They were coon hunting out of a Model T Ford, an old Model T. And they had just gone through a major pandemic in this country. And, you know, I really didn't realize that, but apparently there was a big pandemic in the country back there in the 20s that killed a lot of people. But what we're planning to do, I guess, is just get around and make a nuisance of ourselves there for about 3 days if we can. Yeah.
And nothing like it. You know, you're talking about hunting in the Model T. When we first started hunting, we hunted out of a car, put the dogs in the trunk of the car and drive on down the road, turn them loose.
Yeah, that's right. I can remember.
One time, I bought a pup about 2 hours and a half from here, and it's been several years ago now. So the guy that I bought it from, he told me his wife knew which pup and all that stuff. So long story short, I get the pup. So I go out to the car and I put pup in the trunk of the car. And this lady had a fit. Oh, you're not going to put that pup in the trunk, are you? And I said, yeah, I'm going to put it in here. I had a towel in there. I finally just said, lady, the pup's going in the trunk. That's the only place I got. And I shut the trunk down and got in there and drove off.
Well, my mother was one of these people who was always complaining about something smelling bad. You know, what is that odor? You know, my dad would go coon hunting on Saturday night, and most of the time I was with him. And we hauled the dogs in the trunk of the car. Well, we only had one vehicle.
That's right.
You know, and so all the way to church on Sunday morning, she'd be complaining about that dog smell in this car. I can smell those dogs. Yeah. And my dad, he was just cool as a cucumber, man. He'd just go right on. He just wouldn't really even act like he heard her when she was complaining like that.
My wife Becky's the same way. I keep telling her I'm gonna have her nose worked on. Take that smeller out.
We
was going somewhere yesterday to help my son move some furniture. So we get in my old truck, and it's a fishing and hunting truck, you know.
Yeah. What a truck's supposed to be.
That's right. So anyway, she said, I don't like to go in that truck. I said, well, we got to help move some of the furniture. What, you can't go in the car. She said, but it smells like fish. I said, make that truck. You said, it does, you fish in there, and it smells. But I don't put the fish in there. She said, it still smells like fish.
Oh, yeah.
She come out of the house with it. Clean towel to put on the seat.
Oh, yeah. They just don't understand us boys.
They don't understand it. They don't understand it.
Yeah, well, my dad, I can remember, it was about a 500-mile trip from West Virginia to Dixon, Tennessee when I was a kid going to my grandmother's. And those dogs would ride that whole trip in there. Of course, he'd get them out, you know, when he'd stop for gas or whatever, and he'd get them out, and he always told me, he said, don't crack, if you're hauling these dogs, don't crack that lid. That sucks the fumes right back in there. Just close it down. They're not going to suffocate. He said, you don't suffocate in the car with the windows up. You know. So, but I remember one time we went rabbit hunting over at the Isaiah Kidd farm in West Virginia there. And we went with some other fellas, and we kept our gun. We didn't have any rabbit dogs. They had the rabbit dogs. as we say in West Virginia. Few people back then said beagles. They said you got rabbit dogs, you know. And but anyway, somehow we got back to the car and got ready to leave. And my dad had left his car keys in his hunting coat pocket, and he put the hunting coat in the trunk and shut the door. And we got ready to go, and the keys was locked up in the trunk. So what they had to do is they took the back seat out,
yep,
and got a wire or something. I think a piece of barbed wire, or I don't know. It wouldn't have been a coat hanger. I don't think he would have had out there in the woods. But they finally fished that jacket up through that back seat, mm-hmm, and got the keys out. Or somehow, they could get in the car, but they didn't have the keys to start the car. Was what it was. But those old memories, boy, I tell you, there was a fellow that loved to rabbit hunt, and I would go hunting with. When my dad worked away, I'd go hunting with anybody that would take me hunting, and we went one day during the week. This guy was a banker, so he could get off. He was a president of a bank, a small bank in a small town there in West Virginia. But he was my dad's coon hunting buddy. His name was Eddie Witt. And boy, did he, anything to do with hunting, he loved it. He wanted to stay long and all. But just a minute here. I think that COVID's coming back after me. Anyway,
get you something to drink.
Yeah, That's right. We went over to the Isaiah Kidd farm, and there was a big hollow that ran back in toward the mountain. It was called the Ben Low Hollow. And we were hunting on a hillside there, and what we were doing, there was a light snow on the ground, and we were just tracking rabbits up and jumping them and shooting, mm-hmm, and there was a lot of rabbits. Well, I had a 12 gauge and he had a 16 gauge, and man, it was cold. It was brutal cold. So I'd about froze out. Well, he ran out of shells, and I said, well, good, man, we can go home now. You know, I was over it. He said, I told him, I said, I'm going on back to the truck. And he said, well, if you don't mind, let me use, you still got some shells? And I said, yeah, I got some shells. He said, well, I want to see if I can kill another rabbit or two. And he stayed out there. I don't know how long he stayed out there with my gun, you know, and I think he did kill another one or two. But, man, it was cold, and I thought, man, I ain't staying out here freezing myself to death over a rabbit now. It's just not going to happen. But, anyway, he was a great fella, and, of course, he's passed on. He and my dad hunted many years together. He went down to Turtletown, Tennessee, and bought, out of Full Cry magazine, a bird song dog. Did you ever hear of a bird song?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, it was a foxhound breed.
Right.
And he called this dog Old Track. And Track was a black and white dog, looked more like a walker dog. He had a white ring around his neck. And, boy, he proved to be a good one. But the first night we took him, he wouldn't hunt. He just kind of stood around, looked at us, and old Eddie was sick. He said, boy, that guy's lied to me about this dog. But he was a real drifting track dog. He could really get a track going.
A lot of people make that mistake. They go buy a dog and they didn't want to hunt it the first night. I tell my buddy Jamie Perry, and he's bad to do that.
Yeah.
I said, keep that dog at home and feed it for a week or two and let it get to know you, and it'll go hunting.
Yeah, that's what I always...
He'll buy one, come home and hunt it that night.
Yeah, yeah. And I often wonder, you know, these dogs. I was looking at results of a pro sport side-by-side hunt here this last weekend, and There I see John Strickland handling a dog for Ike Graney. Ike's the guy that owns several dogs down here in Florida.
Right.
And I guess Dual Murphy, who handles for Ike, he got two dogs in the final 16 of that hunt so that he couldn't handle both of them. So I guess John stepped in, you know. But the point being, you know, these dogs today, I mean, as soon as you unsnap them, they try to get in the next county anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I guess it don't matter. It doesn't matter who's handling them, you know.
No, probably don't. Used to be the dogs packed and it was a call-in contest, but the handlers won the hunt most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, because they could call. You know, you had to have a dog, if it located, you treat him and you didn't wait for him to bark again. You just treat him on the locate. But now they let them stray for a while and then go to them.
Absolutely. Well, you know,
but they never were together.
Nope. And it's Pup that Mark Miller's working for me up there in the mountains. He's as independent as he can be. I don't know where these dogs get this, you know, because a lot of times he needs to be in there with fever on that tree with that raccoon in it instead of out there touring the countryside, you know.
I don't want them to do that anymore.
No, I know it. And my dad didn't like that. He said, in fact, he'd keep a young dog on a leash a lot of times and even walk them into the tree. And that used to frustrate me. I said, how's that dog going to learn anything if you don't turn him loose, Dad? He said, he'll learn a lot of stuff, but it's not stuff you want him to know. So he had his way.
He was teaching them to pack and be with their mother dog.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that word we use pack, you know, in bear hunting, you talk about when you get the track jumped, you pack them up. You say, you know, in other words, put more dogs in there, you know. You want the dogs to pack in a bear, you know, in a bear hunt.
Oh, yeah.
But it's sure different. Well, you know, Nubbin, it's a lot of fun to have a good dog that you can, just like when you had old Max. We hunted him at White River. And, you know, that time he went way in there about 900 yards there from Lower Eagle's Nest and got treed. We had to walk way back in there to him and all. And, I enjoyed seeing a dog work like that. I really do. But I don't have the legs to do that anymore.
Yeah, well, I don't either. In fact, I haven't hunted. This is the first year in my life that I haven't hunted. I haven't hunted any this summer.
Yeah.
You know, it's been so hot here. Of course, it's cooling off now. I told Jamie yesterday, I was talking to him, and I said, y'all been hunting? He said, yeah, we went last night and treed two. And I said, well, I got my light on charger now. I'm going to be ready to go for long. So.
Yeah. Well, as that weather starts to go a little bit, I was talking to Ella today, and I said, you know, when I lived in Michigan, when we'd leave Autumn Oaks there and leave Richmond heading north on Sunday after we packed everything up and headed back, you could tell that the air was starting to turn a little. You could feel a little bit of fall in the air. And you knew it wasn't going to be long. And, of course, with UKC, Autumn Oaks weekend, and then the next weekend I always had the Texas State Championship.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd get on a plane, you know, fly usually into Dallas and Fort Worth. And, of course, it was still plenty hot down there, real hot, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then you know, the following weekend then would be the zone hunts for the world hunt.
Okay.
And then the weekend after that would be the world hunt. And then that worked out great for me living in Michigan, because we'd get all that done in September. And our coon season came in October 1st up there, you know. Of course, we didn't kill many coons at the first of the season because the hides weren't any good. You know, but you still, you know, you had to go opening night, man. Had to be out there with a gun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the good old days, man. I did that for many, many, many years, that routine, you know. But, well, buddy, I tell you what, I don't know whether we'll try to go out and walk along with anybody or listen to a dog tree a coon while we're up there or not. I'm not going to even bring any hunting gear, I don't think.
I'm not planning on going out with anybody, but if we do, we stayed on the road and listen to them.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I like to do that if the mosquitoes are not too bad. Oh, I was going to tell you, the feels like temperature down here today was 112 degrees. When I came back in with my truck there earlier today, I told Ella, I said, man, it is hot today. I think this may have been the hottest day we've had.
And, well, 2 weeks ago, we had some hot weather here. But now the last week, it's cooled off. It's been raining a whole lot lately here. And it's cooled off. It feels good out there.
Well, it does me good to go when I go hunting with the fellas anytime, spring, fall, or I hardly ever go in the summer anymore. But guys carry a lot of water for their dogs, and especially guys down here. Most of these dog boxes down here, they have what I call a summertime dog box. You know, it's just rails, you know, that fit down in the back of a truck. And your bed of your truck's the bottom of your box, you know, and you have a shelf on top. And I noticed that some of them have a special place for a cooler to sit, you know. They keep a cooler and they keep plenty of fresh water. And these spill-proof dog bowls are really, watering bowls are really good. You know, I know it's my buddy Randy Smith in Pennsylvania. He uses them all the time with his dogs. And but you got to keep that dog hydrated. If you keep him plenty of water, you know. And it's just been absolutely too hot to run hounds down here right now. And usually August is about the hottest month of the year down here.
Well, today's your old buddy's birthday now. Old Mark Miller.
They'll be listening to this after the fact, but that's right, that my buddy Mark Miller.
I wished him a happy birthday this morning.
Yeah, I saw your message tell me not to forget, and you're the best about remembering birthdays.
Facebook will remind you about birthdays, but I got a calendar in the kitchen and I write everybody's birthday down.
That's great. Yeah, I haven't talked to him today. I imagine I don't know whether he worked today.
The call is being recorded.
Or what?
The call is no longer being recorded.
Man, I wonder why I'm. Yeah, that's coming.
That's coming off of my phone.
I got you. Somehow you're, well, that's okay. Well, I'm recording it here where it matters, so we don't care. Tell that guy to shut up.
I did. I punched that button. I turned it off.
All right. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Mark Miller, he's in his 50s. I think he's probably going down the backside of 50 now.
He probably is.
I don't know exactly how many, but really a good friend that I met, you know, when I needed somebody to handle a puppy, help me with a puppy, and he came along and turned out to be a real blessing.
That's right. He's been a good one for you, I tell you that. He keeps them in the woods. And that's what you got to do. You got a young dog, you got to put it in the woods. You can't carry it one time a week and make a coon dog out of it.
Well, and that's it. And you know, I knew when Bill Scheninger up there in Ohio had raised that litter of puppies out of a dog that I let him have, or Tony Beals and I let him have, called her Dancer. And I've told that story. But anyway, those puppies came, and unfortunately Dancer died when they were, I don't know, 8 days or something like that old. And Bill's wife Cindy bottle fed that litter and all, and Bill contacted me and he said, "I've got a puppy for you." And my first reaction was, you know, man, I can't take a pup. I just can't do it. But it was a grandson of the old Hoss dog that I liked so much. He wasn't great, but he was my buddy, and I drove a lot of miles with him. So, you know, without somebody like Mark that was willing to go partners with me on the dog, you know, that would have been, that fever story would have never happened for me. You know?
No, it wouldn't have happened.
No. And Mark's been
what I remember about old Hoss was he would mind better than most children would mind.
Yeah.
Know? You could tell him to do something, and he'd do it. You know, he understood your voice, and he knew what you were talking about.
Yeah, I went to the grade school, elementary school, with him several times, and put on a little exhibition for the kids. You know, where you get him out, he'd sit. Stay, and you'd tell him to come, and he'd come, and you'd say down, and boy, he'd just drop to the ground like he's shot, you know, and then tell him to come, here he comes, sit down, and then if I'd have the truck somewhere with the dog box door open, you know, and I'd just tell him, kennel him, boy, he'd knock the back out of that dog box getting in there, you know. And I had a lot of fun with him, but I noticed that about him when he was real young, you know, 4 or 5 months old, that he paid attention. You know, when you talk to him, he listened to you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a lot of fun. But you can do that with dogs if you spend the time with them, you know. But somebody once said they thought old Hoss would drive my truck for me for one of those peanut butter biscuits.
He probably could have.
But, you know, my stepson, Scott, is real good at training. He's got a lab dog, lives in the house. Of course, when the dog lives in the house, it understands more because
yeah.
you talk to it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said, "I taught this dog to count." And he'd put some food on the floor, and that dog would look at it. And he said, "He won't pick it up till I count to five." And so he'd start counting, and he'd skip the number three. But three was the key for the dog to eat. And he'd say, "One, two, 4 or 5, dog would look at him. And then he'd do it again. But when he'd say 1, 2, 3, then the dog would eat that food.
yeah, he knew that he was keying on
that. Still got that dog, and it does mind just like he minds good.
Yeah, well, they're fun to train. My mother always talked about old Bozo when she was a kid growing up. And she said they'd go to the swimming hole there on Cabin Creek in West Virginia, and they'd jump in and act like they're drowning, and old Bozo would jump in. He said he'd come and get her right by the hair and pull her out of the water. You know? Yeah.
Well, dogs are smarter than people give them credit for.
Oh, yeah, they are. They definitely are. Mm-hmm. And the smarter they are, the better the dogs they are. And that applies to coonhounds. Intelligence is the number one factor I believe you got to have in a good dog. Now, you can get a dog that'll tree a coon and all, but yeah. Well, Nubbin, we've been at it. We're going on toward an hour, and I wasn't going to keep you that long today, but I wanted to.
I was sitting around here napping anyway after taking them girls shopping, so.
Yeah. Well, our plan for Autumn Oaks, for any of you guys out there that want to run into us while we're there, we're going to be leaving Nubbin's house outside Birmingham bright and early Thursday morning, the 28th of August, and we'll drive up to Richmond, Indiana. And we'll roll in there. Usually we get in there about 4 or 5 o'clock, don't we, Nubbin? Something like that, maybe a little earlier. And we'll be there, and I'll probably set up a table there in what they call the media center in the headquarters building where UKC calls out the casts. and does all of their hunt related. I think they call that the Hunt Building. It used to be the Coleman Center. It's where we used to do everything. Mm-hmm. But they've got the big center over there, the big blue building where they do the dog shows and all now. But anyway, we'll be there Thursday. I think on Thursday is when they have their hunt for the dogs that are going to show in the duels show. The dog has to win a cast. If he wins a cast in the hunt on Thursday night, then it gets to show in the show on Friday. And they lump the dogs by breed, you know. So wow. If I were to take Fever, which we're not going to, but if I were to take him and hunt him on Thursday night and he would win a cast, he'd be eligible then to show in that show on Friday. Mm-hmm. And then they have other shows. They got shows going every Friday and Saturday day. And then Sunday morning is their awards ceremony where they give away the trophies and all that. But it's just such a great time, and it's a good time to get around and visit all the campsites and see people in the evening after, if you're not hunting. And there's entertainment. Last year they had a great bluegrass band, Daniel Patrick and that Rob Patrick and all that group. I hope that they're going to be back this year. I don't know if they are, but hopefully they'll have some entertainment there in the headquarters building on Friday night. But just Autumn Oaks, the event where the history's made, it's just a fun time. We used to always say, you know, enjoy the last weekend of the summer with your coon hunting friends and family at Autumn Oaks and the event where history is made. And I'm talking to the man that won the 25th anniversary Autumn Oaks, won the whole shebang in Jasper, Indiana. And that, what was that, 1988, was it? Or
1984.
Four, okay.
1984, it sure did.
Well, that's the year after I went to work full-time at UKC. I went there full-time in January of 83. So.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, he was a good dog. You know, I won a lot of stuff from him.
Well, every man, I think, seems like is entitled to at least one real good one in their lifetime, you know. I look on Facebook and I'm reminded of Ed Bates, Morris's buddy. Ed with old Hard Time Spec, you know, and what a legend he was in his day. He won the ACHA World Hunt. He made Grand Knight champion as an English dog, and then, or as a Walker dog, and then they transferred him over to the English breed, which you could do back then, and he made Grand Knight champion again. So, that was pretty pretty cool. That.
Well, you know, our buddy Morris, he's big in the English dogs.
Oh yeah, he's kind of
he's ordered him another puppy, a female this time.
All right.
He's looking for another good one. Of course, he's had the last two. He's has been real good dogs. The one he's got now.
Well, old Skeeter, she was kind of like the benchmark for us at White River. She was always been a coon dog. And then he comes up with Tootie, and Tootie's a crossbred, X-bred too, isn't she?
She's a crossbred dog, but X-bred or whatever you want to call them. But I tell you, she's a coon dog.
Absolutely. Yes, she is. And Morris is a coon hunter. He's not much into the competition anymore. Oh. Morris is actually older than I am, but he's not quite as old as you, is he, Nubbin?
That's right.
Yeah, he's kind of in the mid in between.
He hasn't been hunting lately. He's culled it a little bit this summer. He hadn't hunted as much.
Well, if you're listening to this podcast, and obviously you are, you wouldn't hear what I'm about to say, go by the vendor area at Autumn Oaks to the Timber Creek booth where Bob Osborne and Ronnie Stark and meet a fella named Morris Hardy. You owe it to yourself to introduce yourself to Morris and shake his hand and it will be an experience you will not forget. One of the greatest guys I've ever met in the sport of coon hunting. Funny character, a genuine coon hunter, a guy I look forward to seeing every year at the White River. But go by and see Mars. Tell him that Fielder and Nubbin sent you.
Yeah, tell him.
And,
tell him anything you want to. He'll add to the story.
Yeah, you won't get the last word. I can promise you that. But you'll enjoy the experience. And Bob Osborne, what a great guy he is, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all these vendors that bring their supplies out to these events and set up a store, virtual store for you there at the event for your convenience. Go by and patronize those folks, you know, and that's the lifeblood of our sport, you know, these guys that keep us going. With those things like those
Bart. You got to have lights, and you got to have boots, and you got to have everything they're selling. So
that's right. And my biggest problem is I go around and I tend to pick up stuff I don't need.
That's called impulsive buying.
Yeah, on the impulse. But Automokes is a great experience that you'll enjoy, and there'll be plenty for you to do. Go to the dog shows. You'll see the most beautiful coonhounds you've ever seen in your life. You'll see dogs that have been extremely well cared for and trained, and these handlers, most of which will be women. The women have kind of taken over the dog show world. And there's one reason for that. They're good at it. So Automokes is an experience you'll never forget if you haven't been. So if you're listening to this is coming out on the 18th, and Automokes will start on the 28th of August. It's all in August this year, 28th, 29th, and 30th. So be sure and get out there to Richmond, Indiana, right on Interstate 70 there, just across the Ohio line, and you'll have a great time there. Well, Nubbin, I appreciate you spending time with me today, buddy, and I'll be seeing you here in about a week and a half.
That's right.
And we'll go up the road, and we'll stop at the Bojangles on Thursday morning, get us a big country ham biscuit or whatever, and head on up the road to Richmond.
That's right.
All right, buddy. You take care of yourself. Appreciate you coming on today. That's Nubbin Moore. Archie, we call him. Arnold, we call him. But most of the time, we call him Nubbin Moore.
I've been called worse by family.
All right, Nub, you have a good evening.
All right, buddy. Look forward to it and enjoy talking. See everybody at Automokes.
You betcha. Okay, folks, I want you to also remember the people that make this podcast possible. Buddy Woodbury with W Hunting Supply, DUSupply.com. We talk about suppliers. He's got everything you need, got a great assortment of shirts and hats and all of that. And he handles all the electronics and offers great customer service, tech support on that. And that's WUSupply.com. Also Alpha Dog Nutrition. They provide all kinds of supplements and aids so that you can feed that dog what it needs, and virtually supplements for all kinds of situations. And also to my good friend Big Mark Zepp. You go to Automotion, you'll see Mark in the Garmin booth there. Go by and see Mark. You'll recognize him. He'll be the tallest guy in the building. Anyway, folks, that's going to do it for another week. If somebody asks you where Steve Fielder, say, well, he's with Nubbin, and they've gone to Automokes. They've gone to the dogs.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed-sponsored jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidate see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.